Dennis Mahoney is an upstate author whose first novel, Fellow Mortals, has just been published by FSG Originals. It is the story about a good-natured mailman who accidentally burns down several houses on his route. He risks his life and marriage trying to make amends with the victims. Again, it's published by FSG, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Dennis Mahoney to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. A pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
This is a very cool story. It's interesting, and I'm curious as to how long it's sort of been in you.
How long before I started writing it?
Yeah. I mean, how long had you been thinking about it?
I hadn't really. The character of Henry had been with me prior to writing it. He was based...
The mailman.
Yes, I'm sorry. The mailman. He was based on a minor character from a failed novel I had written a few years earlier, who I really liked and thought would be a great engine for a story. He was very active, very optimistic, the kind of person that made the story happen as opposed to having things happen to him. So when I wanted to begin a new novel, I knew that was the guy. And I fashioned him as a mailman. He had been a milkman in the previous version. There was something kind of archetypical about him. Very old school guy. I needed the proper tragedy or calamity, preferably one created by him, in order to pull a whole story together and really give him a test. And I kicked a million ideas around, and one day the idea of the fire really seemed the right one. It came to me, and I just knew that was it.
Henry seems like a glass half full kind of guy, rather happy, rather go lucky, and yet, maybe not, the smartest of guys.
Exactly. That's the perfect description of him, especially the likable lack of intelligence. There's a touch of Homer Simpson in him. I've known a few people like this, and I won't say that in terms of the intelligence, but in terms of their determination to just be regular good people and without really thinking it through too much. I think sometimes people overthink their good intentions and tie themselves into knots. And, you know, Henry has a dog in the book, and there's quite a bit of symmetry between those two characters. They're just good-hearted, and they just go for what they think is right at the moment and often cause trouble along the way, unfortunately.
I was thinking of Peter Sellers and Being There when reading this. That type of character?
That's interesting. Yeah, it could work that way. He's not quite that far gone.
Well, no, not that far gone, but people read more into it. It's almost like a Yogi Berra kind of thing.
Yes. Someone I specifically mentioned in a recent interview, somebody asked me to name a quote from the book, and it seemed like a Yogi Berraism.
Yeah. What was the quote?
It was, "You're not alone even when you are."
Yeah. Well, very much so. Yeah, that about does it. So when you decided to tackle this, did it then come relatively easy? With the understanding, of course, that there's nothing easy about this process.
Right. A surprising amount of it sprang to mind the moment I had the fire. And I began to populate that little block very quickly. I wanted to get an array of characters. So I have the two elderly sisters. I have the somewhat creepy neighbor with the difficult marriage. I have the helicopter mom with the very tight-run family, and then I had the sculptor Sam, who would be the key victim that Henry had to approach, whose wife died in the fire, and Sam kind of flakes out, goes in the woods. The one thing I didn't get on that day I thought of the fire was what Sam would do in the woods. I didn't know who he was or what he would go back and do. It needed to be something interesting and preferably something visual, and I came up with the idea of sculpting whole trees into figures probably a couple weeks later.
And what happens when you discover that? I mean, does that bring you down a whole, is that a torrent then?
In that particular case, it really was. I still have the little sheets of paper at home. They're tiny. It was one of those little pocket notebooks. Mm. And I just jotted notes front and back on two of them. And to pull them out now, there's a surprising amount of the basic information of that novel written on it. It was dashed down in the Walgreens. It was the Walgreens parking lot in Troy, probably in about 30 seconds. And I just knew I had it. I knew I had something that I'd be willing to work on for 6 months as a first draft, and that's about how long it took.
And then you get it published. And you get it published by FSG. You get a strong publisher. It's a paperback original. So writers everywhere are looking at the radio right now and saying, well, how did he do that?
The "and then" was a two-year part of this process. It was very long. It was everyone's story of dozens of rejections from agents, which is a path I'd been down on two previous books that were rightly rejected in retrospect. The two that didn't make it through definitely shouldn't have. I would have been embarrassed to have them out in the world. This one I really felt deserved a chance, and I just kept at it. And it took a long time. I did a few rewrites based on some good comments. There were a few agents who didn't dismiss it out of hand, but had reasons. And I would go back and rework the manuscript and try again. And I finally got this, the attention of this wonderful agent, and we hit it off beautifully right away. Mid-submission to editors, she retired. And I was really left with the rug pulled out again. You know, having begun the submission process without a deal, almost no other agent was going to touch me at that point. So it was a very scary moment.
So how did it all come together?
She had introduced me to my editor at FSG, had submitted it there. And the editor, Emily Bell, she had such good reasons why she initially passed. It was one of those perfect cases where, gosh, I loved everything she said. I wanted to work with her. I immediately pulled the submission with my agent and said, I've got to do a rewrite for the next month and incorporate these changes, which I did with the intention of sending it back to Emily. And then that was the point at which the agent left. So I contacted Emily directly, and it worked out from there. She had liked the changes I made and thought we still needed a little ways to go, and she had a few more concerns, but she was confident at that point that I was someone she could work with. And we've had just a delightful relationship the whole way through.
Then the process becomes getting out there and talking about it and telling people about it so that they know it exists in the world. And obviously, publishers do their part, but it isn't a lot. So is that a part of the process that you're enjoying now?
I am. I blogged, for better or worse, for most of my 20s. I say for better in that I get very comfortable writing publicly. I had readers for a while. I got to know a lot of good people online, friends I'm still in touch with. The downside was that I frittered a lot of my time away on little blog posts that didn't ultimately satisfy me before I finally got serious about writing novels again. I love the process, and I'm back online doing all I can do to spread the word about the book and interact. And I have to say, FSG has been extraordinary in their efforts. They don't treat me like a little fish, even though I know I am, relatively speaking, especially with their roster. Have a terrific publicist, and they're doing everything. They've sent it around as much as they can, and we're just hoping to get nibbles.
And the thing about them, for people who, you know, may not have much of an interest in the publishing industry that we do, but FSG is considered a literary press. I mean, it has a very, as you say, a quality roster of authors. And I would think just with that background behind you helps a little bit.
I think it does. I think just the name of FSG makes people take it a little more seriously, if not a lot more seriously.
And you go from here where, in the sense of you continue to write?
Yes, I do. I wrote part of a novel during the submission process of Fellow Mortals and realized it was too small and too ungutsy in a way. I was beginning to play it safe in the course of rejection. So I got about 100 pages into that and then scrapped it and began something almost recklessly ambitious, which I'm in the middle of now. About halfway through, it's going to be a big beastly manuscript, and I hope to have a draft at the end of the year.
And is that a concern that it overwhelms you, that it takes over, that it becomes too beastly?
I'm getting a little better with that. Even 300 pages is an incredible amount to try to keep in your head at any one time, and you just can't. You have to bring it down, not only to the chapter or the page, but you're just focusing on the next line or two. The same process really goes for a 600-page book or a 200-page book. I think you just have to build it brick by brick.
I was just talking to John Flansburg of They Might Be Giants.
They Might Be Giants. My son Jack is a huge fan.
Absolutely. And they have a new album out, and he was just telling me that the great thing about them as a band, they've been around almost 30 years, and the 16th album is just out. And the thing about it is that he said for 2 years they were basically allowed to be in obscurity, working clubs, going bar to bar. And then by the time they hit, they were ready. And I assume even in some way, with you having some that work, some that don't, that sort of prepares you then.
That's a great analogy. I always wanted to be the genius 20-year-old who got his MFA paper turned into a novel, but I would have been completely unprepared. I wouldn't have had anything like the confidence in life to sit here and talk to you. Not that I'm a super confident guy in particular now, but I'm prepared for it. I've had time to think about what it'll take to come out and speak about the book. I know my craft enough from having failed enough that I have confidence in the work when it seems to work for people.
You and I share one thing in common, and that is that we both graduated from the College of St. Rose. We just had one of your writing teachers on, Hollis Seaman,
yes,
who has a new book out called Corporate Reality. And I assume you learn from people like that.
Absolutely. She was the only real fiction teacher I had. The College of St. Rose has a new MFA program, but we didn't have it at the time. This was, how long ago was that? Early 90s?
Yeah, we don't need to mention it.
Yeah.
It's like 20 years.
So I did all that they had, and it was great, and they were really helpful. I could have gone on to pursue an MFA, but I just kind of cast off on my own. Again, I don't know if that was the right or wrong thing to do. It's worked out in the long run, but I am 38 with the first novel. It may have happened a little quicker if I had had somebody to keep me on course.
And fiction is where you like to be.
Yeah, it's about all I like to do. I like writing very short essays or blog posts, for example. I find myself a little less inclined to worry over them and perfect them. They're a bit more off the cuff. That just seems to be the nature of my style of blog writing. Some people are very pro with it. I need to put all my energy into fiction.
Excellent. So you're out, you're talking about the book and continuing to write, so then you'll come back and tell us about the new one.
That'd be great.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
The name of the book is Fellow Mortals by Dennis Mahoney. It is published by FSG. Dennis will be reading tonight with Hollis Seaman at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York from 5 to 7 p.m. To learn more about that event, you can go to stroseenglish.wordpress.com. stroseenglish.wordpress.com. Dennis Mahoney, thank you very much for being with us.
I appreciate it.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.